KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. You are listening to Radio Orbit, and this is how we start the show. Good evening to y'all, or good morning, good day to you, whoever you may be, wherever you might be, as you listen to this radio program. You are listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. Thanks to all of you for listening to the program and for supporting KOPN, community radio here in mid-Missouri and worldwide on the internet, www.kopn.org. All right, I will be with you for the next 3 hours or so here. And I'm excited about it. We've got a really cool show ahead this evening. I'll have Samir Osmanagic with us in about 50 minutes or so at the midnight hour. And we will look into the amazing story of the Bosnian pyramids. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that in just a bit. But this man is an archaeologist who is investigating a number of interesting archaeological discoveries in Bosnia that are relatively recent, and at least one enormous pyramid, and amazing stuff. So we'll talk with Samir Osmanagic in just a bit about the Bosnian pyramids, okay? So stick around and hang on. All right, before all the real fun, I better do my duties, though, okay? A quick thank you to Corey, New Wave Radio Theater. Every week, 1 hour before this program, Corey does it up. New Wave Radio Theater this week. Alice in Wonderland. What a great story. One of my favorites. And what a sneaky way to introduce the world to some sort of controversial information that Mr. Carroll put together. When was Alice in Wonderland written? It was I want to say it was in the early 1900s, or was it in the late 1800s? Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, 1865. Wow. All right, Lewis Carroll. You know, that wasn't really his name. His name was Charles Dodgson. But anyway, it was a pretty interesting story that Lewis Carroll told and introduced at a very early time frame. Psychedelics. The whole story of Alice in Wonderland is essentially a psychedelic trip down the rabbit hole, as it were. So, at any rate, great stuff. And thanks to Corey. She does it every week before this program, New Wave Radio Theater. All right, before that, Kelvin and Eric, they do it up. Jazz plus blues equals the Pyramid of the Sun. Tech Radio, keeping us up on the outrageous and quickly, so quickly morphing landscape of high technology. Just amazing what's happening in the tech world. Jeff Wheeler, of course, starts things off every Monday with Uncommon Light, 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. Good music, good talk, good news. Wonderful radio on another Monday night. Moon is, maybe a quarter full. If not a quarter full, we'll be or so in a day or two. And we'll have full moon middle of the week next week, Wednesday, maybe Tuesday, not sure exactly. But regardless, you're listening to it here on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, your imagination station. Glad to be here with y'all and a part of it. All right, thanks to everybody who joined us last week. I enjoyed my time with James Michael Wilkie. What the heck is really going on the Giza Plateau? Speaking of pyramids, you know, what are the messages that are encoded there? Truly is a puzzle, and James shared with us last week his solution to these questions, and we enjoyed our conversation. As we did last week, we talked about the pyramids of Egypt. This week, we'll talk about the pyramids of Bosnia, and I'm looking forward to that as well. We also heard the music of Michael McGinty, a very nice collection of songs from mid-Missouri here, and good to share it with y'all, okay? By the way, all of the musicians that are featured on the program can be found on the website right over in the music archive section. Just click on over there. And if you missed last week's show or any other, you can always hear them from the archives. They're on the web at www.mikehagan.com. And just slide on over to the program archives, and you can check out everything we've done over the last few years here, okay? See what you find in there, and if you find something you like, share it with somebody else maybe, okay? All right, tonight, once again, Samir Osmanagic, the Bosnian pyramid story. And again, this is quite a recent story. The archaeological investigations that are now going on in this corner of Bosnia began only recently. These discoveries are you know, a few years old at best, and in archaeological terms, that's just brand spanking new. So it'd be really interesting to talk with Samir, because he's a guy that's been on the ground and was there before really anybody else even figured out what was happening there. So anyway, I'm quite excited about it. So we'll do that in just an hour, okay, or 45 minutes, all right? Okay, before that, we will hear another piece of music, and we'll play this one called Juicy. I like it. The music you're hearing tonight, by the way, is from a band called D, as in dog, D Numbers. And I think they're an Austin band, and I ran into them a few months ago here in town, and I really liked them, so I'll play some music from these guys tonight. Okay, D Numbers from a CD called Light Parade. And this one, once again, is called Juicy. It's Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Back with you in just a few. Thank you. That's D Numbers. The song is called Juicy. And it was indeed. I like that stuff. Good music from Austin, Texas. D Numbers on the web at dnumbers.com. All right, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. 89.5 FM. And hello to everybody listening to us this evening. On KOPN, over the traditional airwaves over the internet. Whether you listen to the show live or otherwise, every Monday we broadcast the program right here from KOPN in downtown Columbia, Missouri, and stream it on the web as well at kopn.org. And I'd like to thank everyone who makes it happen, live on the radio and on the net. Speaking of the net, I'd like to thank Clay and Nick for the work that they're embarking upon on the website and the forum and the chat. And we're getting ready for some changes sometime during the summer, I imagine. And I think you'll like them, even though I'm really not sure what it's going to look like. But we've got some definitely some new stuff coming for the website in the next few months. Thanks to everybody who's a part of this project for whatever it is that you do to help out, okay? It's much appreciated. Thanks as well to everybody out there who's sending art and music and poetry and whatever you've got. If you think it's interesting and like to share it, well, I'm someone who'd like to take a look at it. So if you send me your art, we'll take a look at it and try to find a place for it on the website. Share it with other people, okay? If you go over there, you can see what I mean at Mike Hagan, HAGAN.com. You'll have access to everything that I'm doing over there. And anyway, take a look, all right? Share your thoughts with us. The forum is always busy, more so than ever these days, and lots of cool and interesting and fun and enlightening topics being discussed over there. Actually, a lot more than any individual, I think, can keep up with it these days, but there's always something for somebody that they may be interested in. And lots of threads actually going on right now that I am paying attention to. So anyway, fun times in there always, okay? We'll go take a look in there for some news stories in a little bit, okay? Also, the chat room is always up and active during the program. And everyone in there, I'd like to say hello to y'all. And we'll take a peek in there as well for questions and comments as we get things moving with our guests in a little bit here, okay? I'd like to encourage my guests as well as listeners to join us there in the chat room and the forum. It's a great way to communicate with people who are interested in your material or just like-minded type people, okay? All right, my email address, orbitradio, O-R-B-I-T-R-A-D-I-O, orbitradio at AOL.com. Send me email. I'd love to hear from you and find out what's on your mind these days. There's a tremendous amount of stuff going on, and it's always interested in I'm always interested in hearing, I guess, what's happening in your world. So anyway, email me. Same thing goes for the guests and musicians that appear on the program. Everybody likes to hear from you and get your opinions about their work, okay? All right, upcoming guests. Tonight, as I mentioned, Samir Osmanagic will talk about the Bosnian pyramid story. I don't know how many pyramids are there, but I have a feeling there's a whole complex. Rarely in the ancient world, when you find one of these things, do you find them alone? They tend to be in groupings. They tend to be in a complex of sorts. And, the Giza Plateau is a perfect example of that. But same thing down in Mexico and in Peru and in lots of other places around the planet. This place in northern Vietnam is a really interesting one called Angkor Wat. And it's a major, major pyramidal and temple complex that has been hidden by the jungles of Vietnam for who knows how many thousands of years, but that's one they've been looking at for quite some time, but a very, very interesting situation that must have been going on there back in the day. Anyway, tonight we'll talk about the ones in Bosnia, the pyramids, that is, in Bosnia, with Samir Osmanagic just in about 35 minutes or so, okay? All right. Pardon me. Next week, the 16th of June, Dr. John Sheliak, here in the studio with me. John will actually be in Columbia, well, in Roachport, actually. He'll be visiting for a week or so, and lots going on in his life, and we'll get to talk with John Sheliak live in studio next week on the 16th of June. That's always a thrill. John's awesome, and really excited to get to spend some time with him in the next few weeks. All right, the 23rd of June, just me and you. I've got a laundry list of things that are sort of getting too long, and I want to take care of some stuff on the 23rd of June that I need to do. On the 30th of June, Harvey Arden, this is sort of tentative, but he's a Lakota elder who I'd like to have on the program. We'll have Brook Medicine Eagle back on the show sometime in July, I think. Howard Middleton Howard Middleton Jones, who is a former partner of James Michael Wilkie, who was on the program last week. Howard could add a lot to the information that, that James put out last week. So Howard Middleton, very difficult for me to say that. Howard Middleton Jones in just a few in a few weeks. Susan Weed back on the program this summer. Dr. Elizabeth Rauscher, very excited to talk to Liz again. Graham Hancock later in the year. Halton Arp, amazing astrophysicist. And I might have Rustam Roy back on the program. I'm trying to set up a series of interviews with Rustam Roy, Dr. Roy from Penn State. He has such a tremendous amount of knowledge in his mind and his brain, and he's been just all over the face of this planet when it comes to, you know, knowledge and discovery and in the sciences. So he's just a treasure trove of information, and I'd love to be able to have Rustam Roy on the program for a series of interviews, probably short ones, you know, a half hour here, a half hour there, but on lots of the different topics that he's interested in and knows a whole heck of a lot about, okay? All right, lots more coming up, and we'll do our best to keep you entertained, all right? All right, let's see, 11:30 on the 9th of June, 2008, halfway through the year almost already. I got a few things I'd like to announce to you. Speaking of June, we have a celebration at my family's place every year on or about the 21st of June, this year actually on the 21st. It's a week from this coming Saturday, and we would like to invite anybody who'd like to come out and join us. It'll be all day, pretty much from noon on Saturday until, well, I guess, sunrise on Sunday, or maybe noon on whenever. I mean, all night, all day, but anytime after noon on Saturday or into the evening and the night, whatever, come out and join us. We'll have lots of people there from all over the place. Listeners from the radio program, listeners of the radio program from all over the place will be there. And might be a great opportunity to mix it up a little bit with lots of interesting and new folks. There are a couple people from Thailand that are actually coming, and Colorado, and out west, and out east, and Chicago area, and lots of great music and musicians that will be there, lots of good food and good drink and conversation and good heart, and a wonderful fire right in the middle of the whole thing. Water, too. There's a little bitty lake there, and a little pedal boat, and go for a pedal boat ride if you want, and go for a hike around the lake, or set up your camp site, you know, you can bring a tent and stay overnight if you like. Whatever. It's going on the 21st of June, okay, at the Shire in Roachport. Ashley and Mai's, nice English, Mike, my place and my wife's place, I should say, in Roachport, Missouri. I'll put a copy of the invitation and the map, how to get to our place, up on the website sometime next week, and it'll be obvious. So if you're interested in coming, you can just go download copy of the map and a copy of the invitation, and then come on over, okay? It'd be great to get to spend some time with whoever it is that might be able to come by, all right? Okay, on the... I meant to mention last week that the 31st of May was the anniversary of Timothy Leary's passing. He died on the 31st of May in 1996, and I don't have to tell you who Timothy Leary was if you're a listener to this program, but I just like to make mention of the anniversary of his passing. He was a very important person, certainly in my makeup of the person who I eventually became, even though I guess we're always changing. You're never who you are. You're always something new. Every morning you're a different person than you were the day before. But certainly Tim Leary had a big impact on the way my life sort of unfolded. And I appreciate everything that he did. An amazing person, and controversial for sure, but certainly someone worth investigating. Anyway, here's to you, Brother Tim. The 31st of May, 1996, Aho. All right, Leslie Kasloff, Les Kasloff, a wonderful botanist. The anniversary of his passing on the 8th of June, 2001, just about 7 years ago. And Leslie Kasloff is famous for essentially a piece of artwork that he did. And at least that's the way I sort of look at it. But it was called, let me look at my notes here. I think it was called the herb. I can't remember what it was called. The herb and something. Oh gosh, who knows what it was? But the bottom line was this: it was a great way to cross reference herbs and ailments. And I actually have a copy of this amazing thing. It was a handmade drawing, essentially. It's like a manuscript, right? But it's maybe 5 feet wide and 4 feet high, and it has just an enormous amount of information on that poster, as it were. It lists as many herbs and flowers and plants as you can imagine, and then cross-references them with different ailments. So it's a quick and ready reference of which herb alleviates which ailment. And he published this thing, the Herb and Ailment Cross-Reference Chart, I think is what people eventually began to call it. But it is 35 or 36 years old now at this point, but it's absolutely beautiful, first of all. It's an amazing work of art because it's all hand-done, and the drawings of the plants and the flowers are just beautiful, and all of the words are written words, like, you know, as if he wrote them with a pen. And it's still considered very accurate, and it was a piece of artwork, but it's also an important contribution to herbalism in America. And if you're an herbalist out there, Iris and a number of other people, my gosh, try to get your hands on a copy of Les Kaslov's Herb and Ailment Cross-Reference Chart. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Speaking of that, I should be using it because, you know, I had about the longest stint of good health that I've had in some time. I was healthy from from March 10th or so until June 1st. So I had about 2.5 months of reasonably good health, and now I'm back on the rack. I'll have to tell you a little bit about that in a second, but anyway, let me mention first that Emmanuel Velikovsky also has a birthday tomorrow. Of course, he was born in 1894, would have been 104 years old, or 114 years old, I guess, if he were still alive today. But Emmanuel Velikovsky, another one of the favorites here on this program, and one of my grandfathers. So here's to you. One last person of note, and a biggie. Pierre Teilhard de Chardin passed away on the 10th of June, 1955. Pierre Chardin, Teilhard de Chardin, was a Jesuit priest who was also a philosopher and a writer and a great, great thinker, actually, somebody who is another one of these remarkable, remarkable people. I don't have much good to say about the Jesuits, typically, but they're certainly intelligent people. And Pierre Teilhard de Chardin is at the top of my Jesuit list, for sure. He was involved with the bringing into the public space the idea of the new sphere. If you read the work of José Arguelles, who's been on the program before, and we talk about the biosphere changing. Well, there's an evolution of species, there's an evolution of technology, there's an evolution of social systems. Well, Chardin and guys like Vladimir Vernadsky was a Russian who was a contemporary of Chardin, and they both sort of simultaneously came up with this idea of the noosphere, or the new sphere, N-O-O-S-P-H-E-R-E, the noosphere. And it was a concept that related the evolution of the planet, where the Earth herself is actually in the process of evolution, and we, as talking monkeys that live on the planet, are sort of just along for the ride. And I've always really appreciated that idea, because, you know, those of you who listen to the program often know that I'm a big fan of humility when it comes to my own species, and I certainly don't think that the monkeys are running the show, although they tend to think that they are, I think, more often than not. But my opinion is that, no, the monkeys just think they're running the show, and there's actually much more going on that is yet to be made clear to everybody. So anyway, we'll see. But once again, Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, wonderful man and a great mind, and somebody who we remember tonight, okay? On the 10th of June, 1955, passed away and joined the ancestors. So here's to you, my grandfather, Aho. All right, a couple of my favorite people just walked into the studio here, so I'm going to throw a piece of music on, and then we'll come back and chat a little bit more. Well, space weather, not a lot to talk about. It's relatively quiet on the sun. There's some things in the news I'd like to mention. I want to talk to you about health care and just relate some personal stuff with regard to what's going on with me, because I've had some questions about it, and I love telling you how sick I am. It always makes me feel, I can get the little violin playing for me, okay? So anyway, okay, one more from D Numbers here. This is called, I don't know what the hell it's called. I can't read the writing on the back of their CD, but it's a good song, and I know that the name of the disc is called Light Parade. Good band, though, from Austin, Texas, D Numbers. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Back in a few minutes, and we'll have Samir Osmanagic at the top of the midnight hour. We'll talk about the Bosnian pyramids, remarkable archaeological story that's unfolding in Bosnia right now. Thank you. Numbers. All right, everybody, that's another song from Light Parade. You're listening to it here on Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, Columbia's source for good stuff. All right, quarter to midnight now, going on the 10th of June, 2008. Amazing. Where does the time go? And I've got a couple things in the news here I'd like to mention to you. Bye, y'all. Bye, Laura. Bye, y'all. Bye, Ruthie. Tell Jeff hi. I'm going to jump over to my website to take a look at some news stories there. I should mention to folks that I have, of course, my standard website, MikeHagan.com, which I've had for, has always, you know, been associated with the radio program. That's nothing new. There's another website, though, that I'd like to mention that I've begun to sort of take under my wing, and that's the former website of Kent Stedman. It's called cyberspaceorbit.com. And for those of you who knew Kent, he was a remarkable person, and his website was one of the gems out there in cyberspace. And I'm doing my best to sort of keep that tradition rolling along. And the archives of his site alone are worth a tremendous amount to, well, certainly to me and a number of other people that have made it clear to me that they're glad to see the website continue. So on the web at www.cyberspaceorbit.com, you'll see what I'm doing over there. And I'm trying to do it in the spirit of my mentor and my great friend and my grandfather, Kent Stedman, just the most amazing person, and my best friend, who passed away on the 19th of April, just a month and a half ago or so. And I'm going to miss him at the party on the Saturday following this coming one, 21st of June. He was always present there at the Shire for the solstice, and his family, or a number of his family members, will actually be there this year, although Kent will be there in a spiritual sense. Actually, I think that these days he takes the form of a great blue heron, and I imagine that he'll be floating around the lake or something during the day on the 21st. So anyway, regardless, cyberspaceorbit.com is a website that is now, well, it's mine, and I'm going to do my best with it, okay? Okay, the first thing that I have up on Cyberspace Orbit is the way that it all began, and it began with a story that's called Chasing Shadow, and I'm actually going to read a little bit from Chasing Shadow because it's a beautiful story, and maybe I'll read the whole thing over the course of the next few weeks. It's not that long, and it's something that I wouldn't mind having recorded for my children. It's a cool story that'll be worthwhile to have in audio form. So I'll do that. I'll read a few pages from Kent's beautiful story called Chasing Shadow. This is a kid's story essentially, but with many themes that cross over into the adult realm. It's awesome. All right, goes like this: Chasing Shadow. In the Enchanted Lands lived a great lady of brave sparkle. Her hair was the glow of autumn amber. Her skin was the pale of the snowy swan. Her eyes pooled emeralds. Mastering the light winds from the sun, she absorbed the rays into her soul, thus commanding all the powers of her world. For the magical creature, she reigned radiant queen of the forest. Even the shy and most fragile were unafraid. Her cottage was a place of gathering, on a hill, cresting a flowery meadow and ringed by deep woods, she held her daily court. They would all come, the animals, the elves, the gnomes, the fair folk, and especially the little halfling children who waited in the realm preparing for births on denser worlds. The most exalted duty of the queen was to nurture these halfling preborns, schooling them to fly the deep journeys. She seldom felt sorrow when they left for their new homes beyond the veil. Halflings would not die, but simply transcend to their mortal worlds, carrying with them the seed of her love, a spark that would glimmer eternally and never cease to be. Occasionally, in the long spiral of time, and always unexpectedly, one of the halfling brood would return. On a silver morning, Queen Shiana stood at the cooking stove, stirring grains and berries to feed her halfling children. It was breakfast time. Her cereals were famous throughout the land. Iron pots were barely bubbling when tiny knuckles sounded at the door. "They come early this morning," she whispered as she moved across the room to slide the latch bolt. Standing on the porch was little Leah. Shiana gasped with surprise. "My goodness, child, you have returned. But you have flown your mortal life on Earth." Leah grinned ear to ear. "Yep, I'm back. How do I look?" The little girl twirled in her little blue dress. Why, you're lovely," praised the queen. "Such curly, golden hair like the sun, and eyes as green as sea stones. But I'm so surprised. Preborn halflings, once they become children on physical worlds, almost never return." Sniffing sweet cereal smells, Leah scampered to fill her bowl. She sat at the parlor table, spooning huge mouthfuls before the forest queen could ask again, "Leah, honey, I must know how you found your way back. You can answer between gulps." "Oh, it was easy," replied the busy girl. "I never forgot the time before Earth, and then my daddy taught me how to cross over." Shiana flushed with excitement. You mean he's here?" "Sure, he's outside." Leah swallowed her last bite and zipped for the door. "I'll go get him. I'll be right back." Shiana plopped on a cushioned chair, muttering, "What will happen next?" She had not long to wait. At the door stood Leah, with her arm around a shaggy old bear. "This is my daddy." The little girl beamed. All right, first couple of pages there from Chasing Shadow. It goes on and becomes a remarkable and beautiful story for anybody who takes the time to read it. So anyway, it's Mike, and you're listening to it here on Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. That's just a little taste of what's on cyberspace orbit right now. Of course, that was the beginning, and some 12 years ago, I guess, and cyberspace orbit became essentially a library of Alexandria on the internet, beginning with a simple children's story called Chasing Shadow. Anyway, if you have the chance and the will, please take a look at cyberspaceorbit.com, and there's a tremendous amount there for your edification and for your entertainment. So I'd appreciate comments as well to let me know how you think I'm doing with it, since I've taken over for the Bard. And the biggest shoes to fill, let me tell you, big shoes, and I'm not particularly, you know... as capable as Kent was, certainly. And I never assume that I'll be able to do it the way he did, but I'll do the best I can with it, okay? All right, we have about 5 minutes before the top of the hour. I still need to get Samir on the phone. So I think we'll skip the news. I might point people over to cyberspaceorbit.com. There's a lot more than just kid stories there. And I might also point you to my forum. Pardon me, the forum over at MikeHagan.com. All right, there's lots of interesting news stories that are always posted up there, okay? All right, we'll play another song here from my friends D Numbers, and then we'll come back in just a few minutes with Samir Osmanagic, and we'll talk about this amazing, remarkable archaeological find in the hills of Bosnia. Back in just a few minutes. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. We'll be right back.
to Radio Orbit with Mike Hagen on KOPN 89.5 FM.
That is absolutely right. You are listening to Mike Hagen on Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. It is just a couple of ticks after midnight, now on the 10th of June, 2008, and it is a pleasure to welcome my guest to the program this evening. His name is Samir Osmanagic. He is fast becoming known as the person who discovered the existence of the pyramids near the Bosnian town of Visoko. But this is only the latest enigma that has attracted the attention of this explorer. Our guest has spent a lifetime traveling to and researching ancient sites around the world, including Central and South America, Guatemala, Honduras, Mexico, Mayan cities, and many of those countries. And he has studied and explored the ancient Peruvian sites. However, in 2005, during a visit to the town of Visoko, and we'll make sure that we're pronouncing that correctly when Samir gets on the air here, Our guest first noticed the unusually geometrical shape of the hills in the region, and he wondered if there might be more to it. He undertook some initial steps to establish whether these shapes were natural or not. Trial excavations began in August of that year. Again, this is only less than 3 years ago, and confirmed the existence of stone tiles across the site and evidence of a man-made structure. We will get to the root of this story and begin right now as we say hello and welcome to the program. Hi, Samir. Thanks so much for being on Radio Orbit.
Hello, Mike. It's good to be here in your show again.
Wonderful. Well, I'll tell you what. For people who are unfamiliar with you and unfamiliar with the story, before we even start to talk about Bosnia, what I'd like for you to do is give a little background on yourself. Let the audience know who you are and where you come from and, you know, why you got involved in and interested in chasing around the world after ancient mysteries to begin with.
Well, I'm Bosnian, born American. I live in Houston for about 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I got business on my own, and through my business I finance all my trips, book writings, projects. I've authored about 10 books about the ancient civilizations, from Bolivia, Peru, to Egypt, Guatemala, Honduras, Belize, Mexico. And really, most of those civilizations do have a pyramid as the main structure within mm-hmm. their cities.
Mm-hmm. And much of your work was done early on in the Central American regions in Mexico, is that correct?
Correct. My PhD is about the Mayan civilizations, and I've investigated about 50 Mayan ruins in the Central American countries. And I've really been fascinated with the ancient history from before. And 3 years ago, when I was going back to my country when I was born, you know, when I saw the hills in the perfect shape of the pyramid, and when you put the compass to it, it shows you east, west, north, and south, mm-hmm. I immediately knew that these are man-made structures. Has been covered by soil and vegetation for thousands of years. And yes, you were right. 3 years ago, we started our preliminary research, and last 3 years, we have spent about 250,000 working hours, and this has become the biggest geoarchaeological project on the planet. And I'm really very glad to say that we do have the first pyramids in Europe, and of all countries, in little tiny Bosnia.
Hmm.
And not only that, these unique Bosnian stone structures in the shape of the pyramid are the biggest pyramid on the planet, namely the biggest of five structures, which we call the Bosnian Pyramid of the Sun,
mm-hmm.
is much higher than Khufu, than the Great Pyramid of Egypt.
Is that right?
Egyptian is 450 feet, and the Bosnian is about 700 feet.
Wow, that's remarkable. I actually did a program last week with a gentleman, and we talked about some of the monuments there on the Giza Plateau. So you're saying that the pyramid, what's been titled the Pyramid of the Sun in the at the Bosnian site, is almost twice as tall?
It's basically one-third taller than the Great Pyramid of Egypt.
Wow, remarkable.
Even the second pyramid in Bosnia, which he called the Bosnian Pyramid of the Moon, with its height of almost 600 feet, is higher than the Khufu's pyramid.
Remarkable.
And not only the existence and the dimensions of those pyramids, but what we are finding in underground is also remarkable. Namely, under the Bosnian Pyramid Valley, we have discovered the huge network of underground tunnels and passageways. And it seems that they run for tens of miles.
And these are these are tunnels and passages that were apparently created by men, or are they a network that was a natural form?
These are man-made tunnels that belong to the prehistorical times. And they are approximately 50 to 60 feet deep. And now we have tunnels going left and right in all directions. Huge network. It's a maze of the tunnel. And number four, what we are finding in those tunnels, we are finding a huge megalithic stone blocks. And on some of them, we are finding the carved symbols, letters, arrows, and some other stuff. So basically, this might be a first sign of the literacy in Europe. So really, this is a huge discovery. It's very exciting. And I must tell you that the public in Bosnia stands behind this project, because this is not just the archaeology. What we are proving here is that the area of Bosnia, the Mid-Balkan, was one of the cradles of the civilization.
Wow. Amazing. Well, I think that it's a great, great opportunity because it's so new, and I should say because it's been so newly discovered, and in the place that it's been discovered, I'm hoping that that the information that's enclosed there and that's encapsulated in all of these monuments can be shared with the public in a way that hasn't been done before. You know, the Egyptian pyramids and much of what's happening in Central and South America have been known about for some time, and much of that information was sort of, and not only that, access to the sites and things like that were grabbed by governmental institutions and this sort of thing. And I think that it really moved those places, those concepts, out of the purview of the average citizen, the regular person, and more into the the historical museums and such. This, to me, seems like such a remarkable find. And because you guys found it yourselves, it seems that it's going to be very difficult to suppress information that's coming from this area.
You're right. What we have on some archaeological sites, like in Egypt or Mexico or China or some other places, it's rather restricted. I mean, you cannot just go there and do your investigation. I mean, everything has to be approved. In our case, the work has been done by the non-profit, non-government foundation called Archaeological Park Bosnian Pyramid of the Sun. And we keep our archaeological sites open for anyone. Whoever wants to do the research, they are free to do so. Just they need to announce that to us, and they need to share their results.
Fair enough.
So basically, the mainstream scientists, alternative scientists, everyone's welcome. Not only that, we got the volunteers on site. People come, they dig with us, they share their analysis. You know, we have a lot of volunteers who are experts in their fields, geologists, archaeologists, geophysicists, topograph, biologist, we open the door for all of them, because what we are saying is this discovery belongs to the world, not to the elite science, not to the enclosed circle, not to the, you know, just a small group of scientists. And I think that's a big quality that we have on this project.
Well,
I'll
tell you that I certainly appreciate it, and I commend you for your handling of the situation. You know, there's a term that they use with regard to internet software and this sort of thing, and they call it open source software, right? Where all kinds of different software professionals or amateurs from anywhere can participate in building the software. And to me, that's sort of a good analogy for what's happening there. It's sort of an open source archaeology project, and anybody can be involved as long as they do good work and share the results.
Exactly. You see, the 21st century will be an era of the pyramids.
Hmm.
Why I'm saying that, you did mention Egyptian and Mexican pyramids, and really, up until the 16th century, the world knew only about the Egyptians.
That's right, yes.
Then after that, we had Cortes and Spaniards coming to Central America.
Mm-hmm.
But during the 19th and the 20th century, all of a sudden, we started discovering pyramids everywhere. Bolivia, Peru, 300 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Northern Peru, there are like 250 Tucumã pyramids, 34 Avachi pyramids in the south of the country. There are thousands and thousands of them in Belize, in Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, Mexico, of course. But also we had the pyramids on Canarian Islands off the coast of Africa, in Sudan, 130 of them in Egypt, 250 in China. We even have some pyramids in the underwater cities between the coast of Japan and Taiwan, off the coast of Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
So we are coming to time that we need to find some of the secrets that the ancient builders incorporated in those structures. And believe me, there is a lot of knowledge, astronomical, mathematical, geometrical. There is knowledge about the energy. There is knowledge about the information that those people knew and incorporated in those structures.
Yes,
that's the reason I'm saying that 21st century will be very important to find those secrets, or at least some of them, and get them on the surface to help our civilization.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've said it many times on this program, but anybody who goes to these sites, you know, if you go to Giza, or if you go to Central America, if you have the opportunity to go to Peru or Cambodia or China, and you actually put your eyes on these things, especially if you're a scientific sort, an engineer or a physicist or something like that, people know immediately that something very special was happening at these places. And people who are honest and will tell you the truth will look right at you in the eye and say, I have no clue how these people did this.
That's exactly right. A year ago, I was in Lebanon. On the east of the country,
there is a place called
the Baalbek.
Yes, I'm familiar. Just the biggest stoneworks on the planet, I have a feeling.
Yes, you've got the tomb block, which is 1,200 tons. What our technology can move is about 300 tons.
Hmm.
Bechtel and the American Corps of Engineers, I mean, these are their limits, 300
right.
tons.
Mm-hmm.
We've got 1,200 tons. You can just, I mean, you cannot just close your eyes and say, it does not exist.
Right.
Yes, it does exist. So obviously, somebody in the distant past had the capabilities to motivate four times more than we do. So let's not pretend that we are the highest point, the peak of the human development. I mean, obviously, in the distant past, we did have civilizations who were more advanced in some aspects than we are.
Hmm. Well, what do you make of Baalbek, since we're talking about that? What did you think when you were there?
This is what I think. I think Baalbek is one of the proof that before this last cycle of the human development, there was the previous one, which was probably catastrophic event. Mm. I don't think that everything started with the ancient Sumer and Babylon and Akkad, Assyria, Egypt, China, and India 6,000-7,000 years ago. Even before that, we did have advanced civilizations. Mm. Baalbek is one of the proofs.
Mm-hmm.
Another proof, of course, the Chinese pyramids, 250 of them, in the central Chinese province of Shaanxi. I mean, all the sources from 5,000 years ago saying that those pyramids, even at that time, were very, very old.
Hmm.
And the only Chinese archaeologist who did a scientific paper outside of China in 1967 was deciphering hieroglyphic writing. And he said in Japan, International Scientific Conference, that he found out that those structures were built 12,500 years ago.
Wow.
Now, the next thing, on the other side of the planet, in Peru, Tucumán pyramids, 250 of them, you can see the water erosion on them. But for 7,000-8,000 years, they've been in the stone desert. And if there is a water erosion, you know, from the rain, it means that it belonged, the date of creation, the date of construction, belonged to some other climate, meaning they are older than 8,000. How old? 10,000, 12,000, even more, we don't know. New dating of some of the Mexican pyramids, even of the Egyptian pyramids, are telling us that we need to rethink our understanding of the distant past. And I believe that Bosnian pyramids, due to their colossal size, will be the main reason that the world's history has to be rewritten.
Wow.
Because we are not talking about the anomalies in archaeology and history no more. We are talking about such a strong elements we need to reinvent, rediscover, rethink our, the meaning of the distant past and of the human development and the human civilization.
Hmm. All right, let's talk a little bit more about the general layout in... What's the name of the town there? Is it Visoko?
Well, the name of the town is Visoko.
Visoko.
Visoko is about 20 miles northwest from the capital of Bosnia, of Sarajevo.
Okay.
Visoko is about 20,000 people, a little town which was completely unknown to the outside world. But thanks to this project, last 3 years, we've had so much media attention. CNN came in 2006, and our project, the Bosnian Wall of the Pyramids project, was the breaking news for 2 days. And ABC came here from space, and they did the 30-minute special, very affirmative show. Of course, BBC came a couple of times, Deutsche Welle, Rai Due, Rai Uno, all the European media were there.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that people came, they wanted to see what's going on, and for the first time, the short Bosnian history, in the last 15, 20 years, we have not had a bad news coming from Bosnia. As you know, there was a war in Bosnia, there were news about the violence, about all these problems.
Yes.
And now, all of a sudden, we have something good and positive going on. We got the archaeology, we got the cultural heritage. In 2 years, we had 400,000 visitors.
Holy cow.
Coming to see what we've been doing there.
Huh.
People come with a smile, but once they see all our archaeological work, all the sites that we uncovered, all these pyramid walls, terraces, shaped blocks and plates, underground tunnels, monolithic, huge stone blocks with the carved symbols, they go back even happier because they see that something real big, is being discovered there in the central Bosnia. Now, what we discovered were the five structures, and we named them the Bosnian pyramids of the sun, moon, dragon, earth, and love.
Hmm.
And what's very interesting is the fact that the three main structures, the sun, moon, and dragon, form, perfect triangle, with a distance between them of 1.5 miles approximately, and the inner angles of 60 degrees.
Wow.
Now, this is the first case that the complex of the pyramids anywhere in the world has such a three unique structures that they form equilateral triangle. So I would say you can see that it was, the place was perfectly planned and then executed. So I think there will be a lot more to come, because after 3 years we discovered so much, but as you know, archaeology is rather slow.
We need
years, sometimes decades, to form a complete picture about the place that was built in the past.
Wow, it's remarkable. What you said there are five main pyramids. The three that make up the equilateral triangle, those are the sun, the moon, and the dragon. Where do the other two come in relation to the other to the three that you just mentioned?
Now, the pyramid of love is halfway from the sun to the dragon. And temple of earth is halfway from the moon to the dragon. So, really, we are getting two more points, but they are halfway from two pyramids. And the third point, halfway from the sun to the moon, represents the entrance to one of the underground tunnels. So, you know, once we connect those three new dots, we are getting another triangle. So it is perfect triangle within the perfect triangle. So obviously that's something what we call sacral geometry.
Yes, yes.
And that's what the ancient people used to do in the past. The next thing that we discovered using astronomy is certain relationships between the pyramids. Namely, the pyramid of the sun, the shadow of the pyramid of the sun, you can see the movement from the early in the morning when the sun gets up, and the shadow moves towards the pyramid of the moon. And on one day, and one day only, on June 21st, the first day of the summer solstice, that shadow covers partially the moon pyramid, and the top of the shadow touches the top of the moon pyramid. So it's really remarkable. And I know while studying the Mayan pyramids, I could notice how the Mayan astronomers were very careful when they were building, you know, their structures, temples, and pyramids. And we had almost exactly the same thing here in Bosnia. And really, that's the reason why we call those two biggest pyramids Sun and the Moon, because of their internal relationship. And it shows me that probably the pyramid of the sun was built first, and then they were checking the location of the shadow of the sun pyramid during the summer solstice. So once they located the shadow, and then they determined the height of the moon pyramid based on the height of the shadow of the sun pyramid.
I see, yeah.
So it's a kind of remarkable thing. I mean, these builders were really genius.
You know, the event that you talk about on the June 21st solstice, is that's a physical event that's going to happen in about 10 days or 11 days.
That's right.
I'm sure there'll be a group of people paying attention then.
Yes, they will. And the same thing like we have in Mexico, let's say in Chichen Itza, and you can see on the pyramid of Kukulkan. Only that day, that snake or dragon
climbs up the steps.
We're going to have the similar thing in Bosnia. And not only that, there is a causeway, the access plateau, coming from the west, which leads to the top of the Bosnian Pyramid of the Sun. To the left of the plateau, you can see two terraces, and they go rather low. The lower terrace, you can see that it follows the sun during the winter season. As you know, during the winter, the sun is rather low, rising. It rises low, Moore's law and, you know, it's the Stahl law. During the spring, it goes approximately at 45 degrees, and the second Earth follows the movement of the sun. And the axis plateau itself is at 90 degrees, the pyramid. During the summer, that plateau basically follows the movement of the sun. So you can see real careful planning of the ancient builders.
Wow, remarkable. All right, let's take a little bit of a break, and we'll come back and talk a little bit more, okay?
All right.
Hey, actually, Sam, before we do take the break, would you please give out the primary website? I know there are a number of them that are associated with the pyramids. Please let the folks know the website or websites.
The official website of the foundation is www.bosnianpyramidofthesun.com.
Okay, bosnianpyramidofthesun.com. Mm-hmm.
That's the first one. And the second one is we are preparing the international conference for August of this year. And that conference website is www.icbp.ba. IC, International Conference, BP, Dalton Pyramids, .ba.
ICBP.ba.
.ba.
Okay. All right, good. We will make sure everybody has those available, and we'll come back and talk again for another half hour, just a few minutes, okay?
All right.
All right, hang on, everybody. This is Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My guest is Samir Osmanagic, and we are talking about this remarkable discovery of a pyramid complex in the wonderful country of Bosnia, outside of a little town called Visoko. And it's an amazing story that's unfolding there, and began less than 3 years ago. And I think it's just a thrill to be able to sort of watch this thing unfold as we're able to now in real time. I will, I can't go to break yet because I have another thing that I have to ask Sam. But you know, I was thinking about how. Because this thing has only happened in the last couple of years, I remember when the first news accounts that came out maybe 2 years ago or so, and it was just a bunch of big question marks. But now at least a few of the primary question marks have been answered. It looks like.
Well, that's true. I think when you see those hills, they look like hills, you know, covered by soil vegetation, forest, and everything. They look natural, but once you do the topography, you can see that they have a perfect geometry with pyramids.
Mm.
Once you see them from the air, once you see them, you know, from the ground, I mean, you cannot miss. You can see the triangular sides, four of them, and they're perfectly aligned with the cardinal points. And that's how the pyramids were built in the past. But until you start uncovering the soil, you are still not quite sure if those structures are man-made.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Once you started finding the huge stone blocks, like in the case of the Sun Pyramid, you find the stone blocks and they look like concrete blocks. That's another thing which will make us to rethink the construction materials in the past, because mm-hmm. we thought that the concrete started with the ancient Romans 2,000 years ago. But these are much, much older.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, once you started finding all those huge stone blocks, and they are sitting one on the top of each other, first row, second row, third, four rows, and then you got the clay layer of about, 3 feet, and then you got another, the fifth row of the stone blocks, and the sixth row, then you really got convinced that this is the work of human hands, of intelligent, developed human hands. And then you got the same slope to the left, to the right, up and down, about 43 degrees, which is very similar like the Red Pyramid in Egypt, in the Saqqara archaeological site. And the second pyramid, the Bosnian Pyramid of the Moon, was built from the different materials. The first one, the Sun Sun Pyramid is some type of concrete conglomerate material, but very, very strong, exceptional quality, like the best concrete we have nowadays. And the Moon Pyramid is built from the sandstone. Hmm. Sandstone is a very common material in Bosnia. It can be found anywhere. It can be found in the town of Visoko, a couple of kilometers from the site of the pyramids. But in nature, the sandstone, when it's found, you know, on the top, on the surface, it's not so strong, and it's rather porosive. But as you go deeper, it's getting stronger and less porosive.
Mm.
And what we have on the site, you have on the top very strong surface. You go deeper, it's getting softer.
Huh.
It means that somebody cut those plates, transported them, turned them upside down in order to get this, you know, good quality side, the strong side in the top, and then I'll lay them down. So you can see a beautiful terraces. And between the sandstone plates and blocks, there is an adhesive material. And we have analyzed the material in the Civil Engineering Institute in Bosnia and Tuzla. And the conclusion, it's the same adhesive material on the Sun and the Moon pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
And it is based on calcium carbonate. It was man-made. So we have a proof after proof after proof that these are man-made structures. So I think it's rather exciting to be involved from the very beginning, and it's really the beauty of this research and investigation.
Well, I think it's a remarkable thing, too. And let's take that break, and we'll come back and talk some more, okay? All right, everybody. Samir Osmanagic, amazing stuff. We're talking about pyramids in Bosnia. We'll come back and talk more with him in just a moment. Once again, on the web, www.bosnianpyramidofthesun.com and www.icbp.ba. All right, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Here's a piece of music from D Numbers. This one is called Crucifixion. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Thank you. Once again, D Numbers. Wonderful stuff. I dig that one, man. This is, again, the music that you're hearing tonight is from a disc that's called Light Parade and was released last year. That one was called, once again, Crucifixion. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. You can check out the band at their own website, dnumbers.com, and they have the MySpace thing and all that, okay? All right, back to our guest, Samir Osmanagic. We are talking about a remarkable archaeological find that has occurred over the last few years in the country of Bosnia, and the man that we're talking with about it is right in the middle of the whole thing and is, in fact, the person who made the initial discovery. So it's a pleasure and a privilege to have you on the air with us here, Sam, and let's get back to it, okay? All right. The next question that I'd like to ask you has to do with, you mentioned, I just want to clarify, you mentioned that the pyramids were aligned to the cardinal directions, the north, the south, the east, and the west. Is that the case with all of them, or is that just a couple of them, or are they all sort of lined up the same way?
It's the case with most of them. Because the best-known pyramids on the Giza Plateau, the Khufu's, Khafre's, and Keren's pyramids, they are perfectly aligned, north, south, east, and west. Except in the case of Khufu's pyramid, that the error is less than 1 degree.
Yes.
The error is only 2 minutes. In the case of the Bosnian pyramid, it's even more remarkable. There is no error in degrees, no error in minutes. It's only 14 seconds.
Holy cow.
A fraction of 1 minute.
Now,
this is according to the investigation of the Bosnian Institute for, research.
Okay.
In the case of some other Egyptian pyramids, know that they are perfectly aligned. But in the case of the pyramids, there are 6 pyramids on Canarian Islands, again, perfectly aligned. In the case of the most of the Chinese pyramids, the ones that can be noticed in the satellite photos, again, perfect alignment. Peruvian pyramids, they have perfect alignment. Peruvian, Acapena, perfect alignment. Just in the case of some of the Mexican pyramids, you know, it varies. Some of them, they align good. Some of them, you know, there is an error of 23 degrees. But most of the pyramids in the world, yes, they do align with cardinal points.
Okay. In Egypt, we know that the pyramids, for the most part, seemed to be, at least in their finished state, rather smooth. If you go to South America, Central America, you find primarily pyramids with steps on them. Do we know what's happening in Bosnia with regard to the sort of design of the sides of the pyramids? Were they step pyramids, or were they more like the Giza pyramids?
Yes, we do know. Well, you see, the definition of the pyramid was initially based on those perfect pyramids on Giza Plateau. And the definition basically says that the pyramids are the stone structures with the 4 triangular sides, the peaks in the apex, the top, and they have like a square base. And but, you know, in the meantime, once we discover so many pyramids all over the world, there is a need that that definition be changed. Because only in Egypt we are finding what they call the true pyramids, like the ones in Giza, with the same slope. But also, even in Egypt, they have a step pyramid in Saqqara. They have a bent pyramid also in Saqqara. You can see the change of the angle, the change of the slope.
Right, right.
In the case of the Central American pyramids, most of them, even the one in South America, are step pyramids. In the case of pyramids on Canarian Islands, also step pyramids.
Interesting.
In the case of Peruvian pyramids, they're all step pyramids. But one thing that is different are the materials. You know, people were using the local materials. In Peru, they were using the adobe bricks. Basically, what they do or how they make it, you know, they got the sand and the clay and the water. They, you know, give it out of the sun for 20, 25 days. When it's hard enough, they use it as the constructive material. In the case of, let's say, pyramids in Guatemala, they were using the volcanic stones. In the case of the Egypt, they were using limestone and granite from the Aswan. But in the case of Bosnia, they are using the local materials. It was either conglomerates, like breccia stone, or sandstone.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some differences, but the concept of the pyramid is present everywhere. Different cultures, different civilizations, different times, but for some reason, they are building pyramids all over the world because these are the most stable structures.
Okay.
And another thing which is in common is the top of the pyramid. The top is always flat. It's like a platform.
People usually
don't know that even Egyptian pyramids, they had the platform on the top. Khufu's pyramid and Kefren's and Keren's and some others, they had the flat top, and on the top they would put what they called pyramidion, and that was made from granite. So that was a small, perfect pyramid on the very top.
Hmm.
In most cases, the pyramidion is missing, but we know that the height and the size of those pyramidions are remarkable. 30,000 pounds, you know.
Huh.
15 tons. So now we have a question. How did they get that pyramidion on the very top?
Mm-hmm.
Fit so perfectly. In the case of the Mexican pyramids, on the top they would usually build the temple, and usually from the inferior material. That's why the temples are not there anymore. In the case of the Bosnian pyramid of the sun, we can see that there is a platform on the top, but over there, the top is also missing. We can see a lot of common elements, but we can see some differences as well.
Okay. All right. Underground tunnels. I'm interested by this.
Yes.
I'm also interested in how you discovered that there were underground things happening there. Could you tell us a little bit about how you guys figured it out?
Yes. 3 years ago, when I published my first book about the Bosnian pyramids, which is called The Bosnian Pyramid of the Sun, I mentioned, actually I had the hypothesis, that beside those structures above the ground, we are going to find, we are going to discover the network of underground tunnels. And at that time, some of the professors, some of the, you know, mainstream scientists were attacking me, insulting me, saying, you know, what he's talking about, those tunnels, the best he can find would be like natural caves or medieval coal mining facilities. But what I had in mind was the experience from Egypt and Mexico. The famous Step Pyramid in Saqqara in Egypt, it's only one pyramid, but underneath there is a network, there is a maze of underground tunnels. And there is no explanation why, but they're there.
Mm-hmm.
On the plateau of Giza, we know that under the plateau there are underground tunnels that connect all the pyramids, the Sphinx, the Nile. In the case of Teotihuacan in Mexico, 1 hour north drive from the Mexico City, it's a huge complex of the pyramids.
Mm-hmm,
there
mm-hmm.
is a network of underground tunnels. So I said in my book, if the tunnels are everywhere, we are going to find them in Bosnia as well. And then I was right. A year and a half ago, we managed to find the entrance to one of the tunnels, based of the, you know, locals, and, you know, they were telling us that there was like a little tunnel there.
Hmm.
But inside, it was narrow, it was about 4 foot high and about 3 to 4 feet wide. And then we started cleaning the tunnel. And as we started cleaning, more surprises were waiting for us. Namely, instead of only one narrow tunnel, we realized there is a huge network that has been covered. It seems that the whole area was flooded in the distant past.
Mm.
And once the water receded, a lot of, you know, stones and sand and all these materials were left. And once we started cleaning the materials, you know, we started finding the side tunnels to the left, the right, everywhere.
Huh.
Every, you know, 10, 15, 20 feet, you're finding more and more side tunnels.
Hmm.
So it's a labyrinth. It's something which is very exciting. Now, on some places, we did find stalactites. You know, it seems that the roof of the tunnel would collapse, the stalactites would form.
Mm-hmm.
And using the uranium analysis, we determined that the stalactites are more than 3,000 years old. Now, if they are more than 3,000 years old, it means that the tunnels are even older, much, much older.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But this fact was very important for us because it does eliminate the possibility that these are the medieval tunnels, these are Roman tunnels,
right,
that are 2,000 years ago, these are, you know, ancient Illyrians that are 2,500 years ago. So this is something that belonged to the unknown civilization. This is a huge discovery, you know, for the whole world.
Oh, my gosh. I'm just thrilled by it. I think it's so exciting. The other thing, well, there's a whole bunch of things that are exciting about it, but I'm very interested in the fact that you're actually finding symbols and some sort of written form of what appears to be a language, too. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, gladly. Well, you see, once we started cleaning those tunnels, then we would see that different material is sticking out, like little stone material, and then the stones are mostly sandstones. Now, obviously, the sandstone does not belong to the tunnel itself because the tunnel was built into the conglomerate material. So somebody brought those sandstone blocks.
Mm.
Some of them are a couple of thousand pounds, but some of them are even 20,000 pounds.
Huh.
Now, one of the blocks, the megalithic blocks, is about 9 feet long and about 6 feet wide, 3 foot thick. That piece is about 20,000 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
When we first entered the tunnel, that piece was about 650 feet away from the entrance.
Okay.
Now, let me somehow, you know, drag that piece from the entrance to that point. Now, that's a mystery.
Hold on a second. I want to clarify this for in a visual sense so people can understand the difficulty of this task. In other words, you've got a very large stone block that has to be moved down a tunnel, but you don't have much room to work. You don't have a lot of room to get around the thing, right?
Well, that's true. From the today's point of view, we can see it at the narrow tunnel. But that stone is the proof that the original size of the tunnel at the actual time was much, much bigger. Probably the height was about 9 or 10 feet.
Mm-hmm.
The width was 10, 15 feet.
Okay.
So that's one thing. So really the mystery is who built such huge network of underground tunnels. That's a huge construction complex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 60, 70 feet underground.
Right.
And it runs for tens of miles, you know. So you have to have very advanced knowledge of construction to build such a, you know, such a complex. The next thing, the slope is about 1.5 degrees. So the main road that we are cleaning is 1.5 degrees, and the slope is toward the exit.
Mm-hmm.
Why is the slope important? Because of the water drainage. Now, if it was level, if it was 0 degrees, then the water would accumulate and it would ruin the walls. If the slope was 5-6 degrees, then the water flow would be too strong, and again, it would ruin the walls of the tunnel. Nowadays, in 21st century, we use the same slope, 1.5 degrees, to drain the water.
That's right.
Things like that, it's really catching our attention because somebody had really advanced construction. But anyway, let's go back to this. So it's about 20,000 pounds.
Okay, and this is that sandstone block we're talking about.
Yes.
Okay.
If we are to hand carry the block, how many people we would need?
Well, a lot.
If an average person can carry 100 pounds, is that 20,000 pounds? You need 200 people to hand carry that block. 200. Well, if the block is about 9 feet by, 6 feet, you cannot put 200 people around
right.
9
feet. Right, right. Where are you going to put all the hands? Yeah.
Yeah, so now the question of the transportation and the technology they use labeled as one of the mysteries.
Mm.
So, when we found that rock, it was almost completely covered with the conglomerate. And then we started, you know, removing the conglomerate material, a lot of sand, a lot of pebbles, a lot of, you know, stones.
Mm-hmm.
So, we removed that. And then on the surface, we found out that somebody carved certain symbols. Like we found the 4 or 5 arrows, we found an arrow. Arrow is, you know, obviously somebody was directed somebody which way to go, which is rather understandable because if you have a maze underground, then obviously you need to get some directions, you know, how to stay on the right track.
Right.
But secondly, we can see like a half moon, we can see something like letter C with the line, you know, left and right. We can see some, you know, half circles. So a lot of symbols. And at this time, we cannot really figure out what they represent.
Are there linguists and these types of people that are examining that stuff and trying to figure out if it's connected to any other language that we're familiar with?
Yes. Yes, we have several people working on them. Some people from Hungary, from Bosnia, even from Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
People who are familiar with the oldest European writing, which is called the Runic writing.
Yes.
It was found in Hungary, in Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like 4,000 or 5,000 years old at the most. Then there are the glossal tablets, which were found in France. There is a Brazilian researcher who deciphered them and who claims that about 55% of the Bosnian writings or Bosnian symbols match, you know, what he found in France. But obviously, what we have there in central Bosnia are the proofs of the literacy. So we have signs of literacy.
Mm-hmm.
And considering the fact that this block was covered by conglomerate, which is thousands and thousands of years from the or maybe tens of thousands, we might discover the oldest literacy in Europe. So it's thing after thing which proves that this is, at this moment I would say, probably the most important discovery in archaeology and maybe in all science.
Remarkable. All right, let me ask you one quick question before we take a break at the top of the hour here, just to put something to rest. I've had a number of people send me email and question. Well, one person actually mentions that he read a story early on, over a year ago, with regard to certain scientists who were not particularly agreeable with the fact that these were man-made structures. Has that pretty much been put to rest at this point?
It is. For the last year and a half, we don't have people who are saying that these are, you know, natural formations.
Mm-hmm.
Namely, when we first started the project in 2005 and 2006, there were a number of archaeologists and geologists from Bosnia, Croatia, from UK, and from the US. People who have never come to the location, but who claimed that there was nothing there. They were saying there were no civilization in the distant past to build such a huge monument, and they were saying it's just a hoax.
Mm.
And as a matter of fact, some of the Bosnian archaeologists, and there are just a very few of them because there is no faculty of archaeology in Bosnia, 4 or 5 of them, they wrote a letter to the European Archaeological Association led by Anthony Harding, and they asked from him to send official letters to all European national associations and ask them to boycott this project. And that's what they did. So European, you know, national associations decided to boycott the project, so they never came to the Sokol,
that's
Bosnia.
What a waste, what a loss.
So, you know, but like I said, Mike, in the beginning, once you have such a huge discovery, and it is not under their control.
Yeah.
They are not in position to decide what to release to the public.
I love it.
Of course, they didn't like that. I'm completely independent. financially, scientifically, intellectually. So I don't care what they think. You know, only I care, the only thing I care about is the truth.
Yeah.
And this is what you're finding. Now, since some of the Europeans decided to boycott us, what we did, we went to the leading scientists of the pyramids. Egyptian archaeologists, Egyptologists, and geologists. And they are coming to Bosnia. 2006, 2007, they are coming this year. And guess what? They confirmed what we found there, and we can talk about it a little bit more after the break.
Wonderful. Amazing place to have found what you found. I'm just thrilled by it. All right, everybody, it's Mike, and you're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My guest is Sam Osmanagic. He is a remarkable man who's doing some crazy, crazy, outrageous archaeological work in the hills outside of a little town called Visoko in Bosnia. And there is something happening there that is just profound. And it's a thrill to be able to talk with Samir and learn about what we know so far about this amazing archaeological discovery in Bosnia. So we'll come back in just a few minutes and talk some more with him. In the meanwhile, we will play a piece of music here. It is the top of the hour, so we'll take a good break here. It'll be about 6 minutes, and then we'll come back with Samir in just a few minutes. But I should say that the website, once again, is www.bosnianpyramidofthesun.com. And there's also another website that is connected to a conference that will be happening later this year, and that is www.icbp.ba. And all of these sites and links and this program itself will be up on my website soon, so everybody can get at it at a later date as well, okay? Okay, good deal. We will come back and talk some more with Samir in just a few minutes. In the meanwhile, once again, the numbers. It's KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, Mike Hagan, Radio Orbit, just about 1 a.m. now on the 10th of June, 2008, 11 days before the summer solstice and remarkable happenings on the plateau there in Bosnia. All right, back in a few. This is a song that is called Here. KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. That's D Numbers, once again, from their CD Light Parade. Great, great music. These guys are awesome. All right, speaking of awesome, my guest is awesome as well, and the work that he's doing in Bosnia and his whole career is very interesting. I'd like to speak with him more about some of his past, more historical stuff at some point. But right now, this evening, we're talking about the pyramidal complex on a particular plateau in Bosnia, outside of a town called Visoko. Our guest is named Samir Osmanagic, and you can find information about him and the work that he's doing on the web at www.BosnianPyramidOfTheSun.com. Now, if you Google Bosnian Pyramid, you'll find a whole bunch of different websites, including BosnianPyramid.com, but all of them sort of reference Samir and the work that he's doing. He's obviously the main influence with regard to this particular investigation, and I'm thrilled to have him on the air with us tonight. So we'll get right back to him here and say hello, Samir, and thanks a lot for sticking around with us tonight.
Sure, I'm glad to be there.
Good. I'm glad you're glad. Sometimes I get around 1 or 2 in the morning, and I'm hoping that my guests are staying awake and enjoying themselves tonight. Certainly, no problem with that.
No problem. even though I just got to the States this afternoon, I came to Houston from Croatia.
Is that right? You just flew in today.
I was traveling, you know, all night and all day.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm awake.
Well, I'm even more excited that you're on the air with us tonight, and I appreciate the effort that you've made, because I know that's not easy when you're traveling around the planet. So, all right, let's get back to it here, and let me ask you a question. I had a nice question come up from a listener during the break there, and I was going to ask you earlier if there were any astronomical connections. You have already made it clear that the pyramids are aligned to the cardinal directions, but we know that certain pyramids in Egypt and in Central South America, etc., even many other places, they have connections to the stars. And in fact, some of these complexes are even sort of Earth-based star charts, this sort of thing. And it's related to the question that this listener comes up with. He said, "Hey, Mike, ask Samir if the pyramids could be part of some global system." And I think that's an interesting question. I'd like to see if you'd like to take a stab at it.
Yeah, two things about astronomy and the pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
We do know that, for example, the layout of the pyramids in Giza, you know, the Khufu, Khefren, and Mekerran, is the same like the layout of the pyramids in Teotihuacan.
Yes, that's true. Mm-hmm.
The Sun, the Moon, Quetzalcoatl.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Those three pyramids, the layout, the triangle, they looks like, or it's almost identical, like the three stars of the Orion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But now, obviously, there is a connection there. As far as the Bosnian pyramid formed the perfect triangle, then you can really conclude that it was the work of, you know, perfect planning. But also, in the star system of Orion, there are three big stars that they formed the perfect triangle. But it is yet to be proved that, you know, they did try to imitate those stars on the night sky.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the ancient people, they were watching the sky. They were trying now to live in the balance in the nature with the Mother Earth, with the solar system, other planets, and other star systems. For example, the Mayans, they had their towns in the cities. They were trying to imitate the relative distances between certain star systems. The same thing in Peru. Pre-Inca civilizations, they were building their towns. Again, the same way, northwest, southeast, you know, following the river like our Milky Way, and they were building certain towns and temples, positioning them same way like the stars there on the night sky. So I would say for them, for the ancient people, the construction, the building was not a very simple operation. Just find a piece of, you know, land and, you know, build a building. I mean, they carefully planned, they picked up the location, and they were building, you know, all their structures, and they were incorporating so many astronomical and mathematical features,
mm-hmm.
those structures. That's the reason why they thought those structures are so sacred, so holy for them.
What about the idea that there might be a connection between these different complexes around different spots on the planet?
Now, the mainstream science claims that there is not such a connection. Mainstream science would say that different civilizations built different pyramidal complexes during different times. If that's the case, then it would be hard to find a connection. But let's look a bit more carefully. And for example, the most magnificent structure in Africa and Central America, the Sun Pyramid in Teotihuacan in Mexico and the Khufu's Pyramid in Egypt, you can see that the base is identical.
Hmm.
It's about 230 meters, let's say it's about, you know, 700 feet,
mm-hmm.
the size of that's all the square.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Number pi is incorporated in an Egyptian pyramid, and the root from the pi is incorporated in Mexican pyramid. The height of the Egyptian pyramid is exactly 2 times of the height of the Mexican pyramid. So these are not coincidences.
Mm.
It seems there was a connection, there was a trade, there was a communication between civilizations in Africa and in Central America. And who was the architect? Is it the common architect? We don't know. But I think there is so much more distant past than we know nowadays. And when you see that the pyramids are really built all over the world, from Japan, China, Mesopotamia, you know, Egypt and Sudan and Canarian Islands, and now in Europe. And the Bosnia is not the only place in Europe where the pyramids are built. It seems that there are some in Italy. We know for sure that there is a one-step pyramid in Sicily. It's a big site, and we don't know, who built it and when. There are 7 locations of the ancient pyramids in Greece. They were built 2,500 years ago. Rather modest dimensions, but still, they were built there.
Yes.
So we can see that was some type of the worldwide movement. The concept of the pyramids was everywhere. Is there a connection? It's very possible.
Mm.
And I think that the future investigation will give us more answers.
Well, I've always just found it fascinating, just from a purely observational standpoint, that these things show up at all these different places on the planet, and they are very, very similar, whether they're identical or not is, you know, certainly arguable, but very similar ideas, very similar structures that are separated by great distances and oceans, and at a time when, as you mentioned, that the mainstream historians and archaeologists say that there's no way possible that there was anybody being able to travel or communicate over these distances.
I think there is a connection, because we are finding there are so many traces that, for example, in Central America, we had the black people, Negro people, we had the Chinese people, thousands and thousands of years, you know, back in past. So obviously the communication was there.
Mm.
We even found some things in Bolivia or in Peru that obviously the origin is from Egypt. So I think the communication in the past was much more developed than we can even imagine nowadays.
I think that you're probably right about that. All right, let's move on to a question about... Now, this may or may not be directly related to the pyramids, but I've had some people ask me, and I'm curious myself because I've seen some pretty interesting images, and I'd like you to talk about these stone spheres, these big, giant stone balls that have been found in the area.
You see...
What are they? Could you tell people what the heck that is?
The reason I started going to Bosnia more often a few years back was the discovery of the stone spheres, namely... We know about the existence of the stone spheres in Costa Rica. They were found during the 1940s and 1950s when the United Fruit Company was planting the banana fields So 15, 20 feet underground, they found about 400 stone spheres made from granite. Granite never comes free in the nature. So obviously somebody, or you know, made those stone spheres. But considering the fact that they were made from granite, which is on the scale of the hardness from 1 to 6, number 6.
Yes, the hardest.
The hardest material.
Mm-hmm.
It means that, you know, it's not that anyone could come with, let's say, copper tools, which are known 3,000-4,000 years back, and then try to shape them. You don't shape superior material with the inferior tools.
Very true.
Obviously, they were using advanced tools. How would we shape the granite with a diamond tool?
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. The other thing, those are perfect spheres in Costa Rica, in western Mexico, on Easter Island.
Really? In other words, you mean the actual dimensions of the sphere is very close to perfect?
Perfect sphere. The tolerance is less than 2%.
Hmm.
The weight of some of the spheres, let's say in Mexico, they're the biggest ones. I saw them in western Mexico. You need to plant some hills, and once you found them, they're amazing. There are 250 of them. The biggest one, I think, you know, the height of like 12 feet.
Oh, my gosh.
They're tonnage. They're like 25 tons. It's about 80,000 pounds.
Oh.
80,000 pounds.
Yeah, in the shape of a perfect sphere.
Yes, and in order to shape it, and people who are in this business, they know the hardest geometrical shape is sphere.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in order to shape them, nowadays we would use, you know, cranes or, you know, forklifts or something, you know, to help us to maneuver with the material. So you have perfect spheres. They are from a very hard material. And they are precise, like somebody was using a laser tool. So even though they are dead, we don't know who built them, when, what was the purpose. You know, indirectly, we can get some conclusions that they are work of very advanced civilization.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in Bosnia, or countries in Europe, all in Bosnia, we found 20 different locations with the stone spheres.
Sam, had you seen any of the stone spheres in Mexico with your own eyes before you saw the ones in Bosnia?
Of course. Mm-hmm. I went there to the western Mexico.
Yes, yes.
I went there twice because I was doing documentary last year.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are real huge. And unfortunately, most of them are damaged because during the beginning of the 20th century, there were a legend that inside those stone spheres, they're going to find the gold.
Oh, God.
People came with the dynamite, and basically, they ruined like 80% of them.
Hmm.
Similar thing in Costa Rica. As a matter of fact, the only active stone sphere is on Easter Island, because that's the stone sphere which is in the original position, like hundreds and hundreds of years back. You put the compass on top of it, the compass go crazy. So, obviously, the stone spheres had something with the energy coming from the Earth. Now, there is a new science called biogeometry, which tried to understand the effects of different shapes.
What did you call it? Biogeometry?
Biogeometry.
Biogeometry, okay.
Biogeometry. And basically, two shapes have the most beneficial activities to the environment, the shape of the pyramid and the shape of the sphere. And probably the ancient people knew more than we know about the energy, about the shapes, because, their mental capabilities are bigger than ours. They were using mental skills. Nowadays, what we do, we rely on technology, on cell phones, on computers, on cranes, on automobiles, calculators. So basically, we've lost most of the knowledge that our ancient people had. So you asked me about the stone spheres in Bosnia. We found them on 20 different locations. inscriptions more than anywhere else. On one of them, 40 stones here. And really, we found it by coincidence, I would say. People would call us, you know, there is not here, there are 20 of them there, 50 of them there. But this is just the top of the iceberg.
Huh.
If you find 100 of them on the top of the surface in thousands of years, and they are prehistoric at the product.
Yes.
How many of them under the surface? 10, 20, 50 feet.
Hmm.
How many? Thousands? Tens of thousands? Millions? It's possible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we know so little about the civilization before us. We know so little about this planet.
Hmm.
I mean, on the bottom of the Atlantic and Pacific floor, there's so many lost civilizations.
Isn't that an amazing just sort of thought when we think that 70% of the planet at this point is covered with water? And I mean, the stuff that we're familiar with and the stuff that we're finding and that we're learning about is only on a small section of the planet. You mentioned very briefly earlier in the program about the amazing megalithic structures that have been found off the coast of Japan, in a place called Yanaguni, I think it's called, and then off the coast, and then in the Caribbean as well. I mean, my gosh, what's underwater, for God's sake?
I mean, lost civilization, and because the land has been changing, and over and over again, the civilizations really gone, and so much knowledge has been gone. But we need to understand that other civilizations did not have the same technology like we do, the computer, stuff like that. It doesn't mean that they were less developed.
Mm-hmm.
We are so foolish and we think that we have the highest peak on the development on this. And we are so wrong about this. Matter of fact, there is not a thing that has not been discovered in the past. We are just reinvented the stuff. You know.
Mm-hmm. I think it was the German philosopher Johann von Goethe who said, "We learn so much because we've forgotten so much."
Well, that's true. Now, there was a question 30 minutes ago. Somebody asked about the scientific attitude and what they think about the project.
Yeah, I had another guy mention Zahi Hawass and why he's giving you a hard time.
Well, as a matter of fact, in the very beginning of the project, Zahi gave one statement that, he claimed that there was nothing there. But then you need to be aware that there is always a lot of politics, especially when you have a project on such a global level.
Mm-hmm.
Namely, as you know, in Egypt, tourism is the main source of income for Egyptians, and every year 8 million people Giza Plateau, and they leave $10 billion.
Right.
All other industries basically depend on tourism. And in the summer of 2006, Zahi's Supreme Council of Antiquities had a meeting with the Ministry of Tourism of Egypt, and the only thing they had on the agenda was the effects of the discovery of the Balgan tourism. And after the meeting, Zahi came and he gave a statement that there's nothing in Bosnia, no pyramids, it's just a pile of rocks. But what happened then? We invited
a highly organized pile of rocks.
We invited Egyptian scientists to come to Bosnia. And first we had Dr. Ali Barakat, who is a geologist and who has been working for decades in Egyptian deserts, investigating how the ancients built Egyptian pyramids and temples. He spent 42 days in Bosnia, on the Bosnian pyramids. And then he gave a public lecture at the press conference, and then he claimed, yes, these are the pyramids in Bosnia. He said that they were original hills, shaped by man, in order to get triangular faces, and then they were, positioned towards the cardinal points, and then coated with the stone blocks, with the man-made stone blocks. So that was the first thing that came from Egyptian scientists. And then the second one, we had the lady Egyptologist, Lamia Al-Hadidi. She gave pretty much the same conclusion, that the Mother Nature cannot shape such a perfect geometry and perfect hills. And then the same year, 2006, first personal friend of Zahi Haras, Professor Mohammed Ibrahim Ali from the University of Ain Shams.
Yes, I've actually...
And he spent a couple of weeks, and his conclusion was, he said, well, I don't know if these are the pyramids or the temples or something else, but these are man-made structures.
Whatever they are.
That was 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And the next, the following year, 2007, we invited even stronger team led by Dr. Nathalie Svelin. Abel Svelin, he has three PhDs in archaeology and Egyptology. He is the man who discovered four pyramids in Egypt. He had written books about all Egyptian pyramids. He's a very distinguished professor. He came, and we had two professors from the Cairo University, from their Faculty of Archaeology, which is the biggest educational institution in the world. You know, they got like 3,000-4,000 archaeologists every year from their faculty, and the fourth member of the team was Dr. Ali Barakat again. So all four of them, after 15 days, in September of 2007, claimed that the Bosnian Pyramid of the Sun is the biggest pyramid in the world. And they are saying this is such a huge discovery of the great importance for the whole world. But they also say, they said that do not look for Egyptian pyramids or Mexican pyramids in Bosnia. These are unique Bosnian stone structures in the shape of the pyramid, with the perfect orientation and with the network of underground tunnels. And it's up to us to, you know, find out who built them, how, and why. And I think that was, you know, rather realistic. So after 3 years of investigation, we decided to organize the first international scientific conference about the Bosnian Pyramids. It will be held in Sarajevo the last week of August of this year. So from August 25th to August 30th, Sarajevo will be the capital of the pyramid research in the world. We're going to have about 60 leading scientists in the field. From Egypt, we are getting 15 archaeologists, geologists, and geologists. Among them will be two deans of two leading archaeological faculties in Egypt. And then we're going to have the director of the Library of Alexandria. We're going to have professors. We're going to have doctors of Egyptology. So besides that, we're going to have Saudi archaeologists, Russian geophysicists, British authors, Croatian, Hungarian, and Baltic experts. So that conference finally, you know, give us the stamp, stating yes, so stone structures are here in Bosnia, so let's put more effort, you know, to investigate and to find out, you know, what do they represent.
Wow, that's incredible. The, you know, what I'd like, actually, is, you know, and we can talk about this off the air, but I'd like to have you back on the program perhaps sometime after the conference, and you can give us a synopsis of how the whole thing went, you know?
Yeah, gladly. So maybe sometime in October. And that second website we gave to our listeners, icbp.ba, basically can show them who's involved, the abstracts of the papers.
Sure, sure.
Of reports. So even now they can read a lot, they can see a lot. I mean, once you see the pictures of the pyramid, it's a perfect geometry, Mike. I mean,
yeah.
You can't deny that.
Yeah.
But go to photo galleries and see the stone blocks under the stones, you see the terraces, the temples. I mean, you cannot deny that. 3 years ago, when it first came up with the hypothesis, of course they were attacking it. They wanted to stop it.
Right.
Now they cannot.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's too late.
Well, it's remarkable. Let's take one more short break, and then we'll come back and we'll have another segment before the end of the program, okay?
All right.
All right, wonderful. Everybody, Samir Osmanagic on the web, www.bosnianpyramidofthesun.com. And also, if you'd like to reference this conference that is coming up in August, you can find information about that as well on the web at www.icbp.ba. ICBP.ba. All right, wonderful stuff and very interesting. What a remarkable discovery. And it's so cool that it's happening sort of right, in real time. That's the coolest thing about it, I think, is that we as observers and as radio listeners or radio hosts or whatever get to talk to a guy like Samir, but it's in the real time. You know, when you talk to people, for the most part, who have studied pyramids in other places on the planet, Egypt or Central South America, China, wherever, the great majority of what we know about those places has been known for some time. And this is all brand new and fresh and just very, very exciting. So anyway, we'll come back and talk with Samir in a couple more minutes, and we'll play a piece of music here in the meantime, all right? This one is once again from D Numbers, and it's called Xylem Up. Mike Hagan, Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, back in a few minutes with Samir Osmanagic. Once again, D Numbers. You're listening to it here on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. It's Mike Hagan. My guest is Samir Osmanagic. We've had the pleasure and the privilege of speaking with Sam for the last hour and a half. We've got another 20 minutes or so with him, and we will make the best use of it. So let's get right back to him and say hello. And my next question for you is sort of a technical one. I'm wondering, Sam, how helpful technology has been to you guys and girls as you've uncovered what you've uncovered so far. In other words, ground-penetrating radar and this sort of stuff. Are you guys utilizing that type of stuff, or is it pretty much a hands-on thing?
Well, you see, the 21st century is bringing us really the benefits of technology like satellite screening,
human
analysis, analysis. And since in our case, we don't have an obvious pyramids like in Egypt. I mean, you can see them, the stone blocks are there, everything's there.
Right, they're on the desert. They're not covered by vegetation. Right.
Exactly. In our case, you got a couple of feet of soil on the top, about 6 to 8 feet of soil on the bottom with, you know, vegetation. So, you know, to convince people, and in order to find the proper location to dig, we had to apply all this, you know, high-tech technologies.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we did. When we started with this by the pyramid, we had some opponents who were claiming, well, Bosnia is a hilly country, but 1,000 hills in the shape of the pyramid. So we said, fine, okay, let's set the three criteria, and let's check the whole territory of Bosnia. The first criteria, let's find the hills with the four sides. Secondly, four sides have to be aligned with the cardinal points, east, west, north, south. And number three, at least two sides should be triangular in shape. And instead of thousands of hills in the shape of the pyramids, we found only nine. And five of them being located in the Visoko Valley,
mm-hmm.
the reason why we call it the Bosnian Valley of the Pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
Then we did a thermal analysis. We checked the temperature during the day and during the night. So we were able to say how quick the heat lost from different hills. If it is a natural hill, then the heat loss is very small because the natural hills are very compact. If it is an artificial structure, then the heat loss will be much quicker due to existence of the passageways, panels, chambers, rooms, and so on. Those five hills in the shape of the pyramid are losing the heat much quicker than the natural hills. And then we invited the leading European geo-radar specialist from Germany. They brought their equipment, the geo-radars, which can penetrate the soil for about 55, 60 feet.
Mm-hmm.
What they found under the soil were what they called 44 anomalies. Anomaly for the geophysicist means that it is not of the natural origin.
Mm.
They've located where the passes, the pyramid walls, the shaped blocks, plates, passageways, panels, and so on. Based on their recommendations, we did some digging last year and the year before, and then, yes, we were finding those terraces and the huge blocks. So we were using, you know, what really can benefit us from the high technology. On the other hand, without the classical, you know, geoarchaeological methods, you really cannot pass by. So we go and actually dig, remove the soil from different areas, from different sides of the pyramids, on different heights. And everywhere we were digging, we were finding, you know, many structures. So basically, I would say that in the last few decades, there is not an archaeological project in Europe. It's such a multidisciplinary scientific approach. We are using so many different disciplines. For example, we even have a biologist on our team. The guy was investigating the roots of the trees. If it is conglomerate material, like in the case of the Sun Pyramid,
mm-hmm.
natural breccia conglomerate, the roots go, they go through that material rather in. But in our case, in the case of the Sun Pyramid, since it is an artificial structure with some type of very concrete, and the roots come to the concrete, they go left and right because they cannot go through.
Mm.
So we have the scientists from different, you know, scientific disciplines who give their, you know, support to what we do there.
What do you know, or do we know anything yet about the interior of the pyramids? Do we know if there are rooms, or, you know, in Egypt we have shafts and the king's chamber and the queen's chamber and all these different sort of strangely designed rooms inside the pyramids. Do we know anything about that now?
Yes. What we know so far, based on the radar screening, is that it's a whole network of the passageways, and we found them on the northern side of the pyramid and the sun, and we located them like 12 to 15 feet deep, and then, you know, they go much deeper, so we lost them on our radar. But we can see that the network exists, that different roads intersect at 90 degrees, they are man-made, and the height is up to 12 feet of those hollow spaces, like geophysicists are telling us. So I think it will be rather, you know, exciting once you get inside.
Oh, my gosh.
The reason why we are already inside is rather sad. You see, when we started investigation in 2006, there are some opponents, especially from this, you know, archaeological branch and some people from the cultural establishment in Bosnia.
Mm-hmm.
And they were against the project, and the guy who's leading the State Commission for Revelation of the National Monument, face to face with me on one of the TV shows, said that he doesn't believe in pyramids, but if he finds that pyramids are, you know, for real, he's going to burn himself from the top of the Sun Pyramid. So what happened, the first couple of months of our, excavation, we were finding the pyramid walls everywhere, the huge stone blocks, man-made blocks and stuff like that. And then he introduced the law with his commission that the whole pyramid of the sun became a protected area.
Hmm.
So we were not allowed to dig there anymore. What we did, we moved to the second pyramid, the pyramid of the moon. We were digging there, we were finding the terraces, hundreds of thousands of people were coming, they were giving us support, you know, the common public. But next year, these people from the establishment, what they did, they did not let us to dig on the moon pyramid for 5 months, so we almost lost the season. And what I did then, I said, okay, they will not stop me from digging. So what we're going to do, we're going to go underground. Literally, we went underground. We discovered those tunnels, we started cleaning them, putting the wooden support, and a couple of those entrances are like a mile and a half from the pyramid.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So we're gonna
It's amazing you found the entrances. That's outrageous.
Yes, we're going to get inside the pyramids. We're going to find the, chambers. We're going to find the galleries inside the pyramids. It doesn't matter of time and the money, you know.
Mm.
Because even though the most of the public support us, even most of the politicians support us, those who don't support us are the people who issue the permits,
who
give the money, or in our case, who don't give the money. So, you know, we got to go to the donations. You know, I'm paying a lot of money. You know, some good-willing people from Bosnia are paying, some companies and stuff like that. But this is so huge.
Hmm.
And even though some of the, you know, elite do not support what we do, eventually, you know, the elections will bring some others
mm-hmm.
who are going to support the project much more than it is case today.
Well, I tell you what, they'd be foolish not to, because it's a remarkable project, and anybody that's a part of it should be proud of it and should be open and willing to share all this information with as many people as possible. It's just incredible. I'm going to ask you a question that's sort of related, actually. I've been sitting on it for a while because it came up earlier in the program, and I wasn't sure if it was particularly related or not. But now I think that it is sort of, and we got a few minutes left, and I'll ask you about it. There's a place in Bosnia, or the former Yugoslavia, I guess, that was called Medjugorje.
Yes.
Right, and for years in the 90s primarily, many, many people were traveling there because they were having experiences there, visionary experiences. It was very similar to what was reported by people that the Christian story of the nuns in South America. What's that whole? I forget what that one was called.
Well,
but
the story about the Medjugorje is about the spiritual aspects of our society, namely four young kids claim that they Virgin Mary.
Mm.
And after that, it happened 25 years ago. And after that, the Virgin Mary would come regularly and give them the messages.
Mm-hmm.
And it has really become the place where millions of Christians come every year. It's about 2 million people every year. So far, it was like 30, 40 million people. And Medjugorje is in Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Mm-hmm.
It is the leading place for the religious tourism. But it is more in the spiritual waters.
Was that place... So in other words, Medjugorje is still on the map and everything's okay there. I was sort of under the impression that it had been destroyed, or much of it had been destroyed via war.
On the map. It is still on the map. And even though the Vatican, the Church, does not recognize that the Virgin Mary did show up, it's still so many millions of Christians from everywhere in the world, from the Philippines, from Ireland, from the U.S., from South Africa, yeah, Medjugorje. But in our case, of course, it's more about something common person can see.
Right. This isn't something esoteric.
The or the pyramid, also about the tunnels. You can actually walk to the tunnels. You can walk on those terraces. You can see the pyramid walls. So it's a little bit different. More in the physical world.
Mm-hmm.
More on the spiritual side.
Okay. You mentioned something about the season, losing the season a few minutes ago. Right now, I think, or recently, maybe April, was what you would consider the beginning of the new season. In other words, so there are people actively working right now, right?
Yes, exactly. Every second weekend in April, we start the new season, and it traditionally lasts for 200 days, for almost 7 months, until November.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, it's at the winter time, it's cold out there. But we don't even start in November, so, and more actively work in those tunnels, you know, clean them and put the wooden supports. So really it's a year-round project, which is something very rare in the archaeological world. I mean, archaeological projects, what you have expedition, it's most cases it lasts for 15, 20 days, a month or two. In our case, 12 months every year. And then plus, we have our website on 7 different languages. And we got the daily news from the archaeological sites. We talk about the visits, about the tourists, about the experts, about the reports, about the media, about all this stuff. And we talk always very positive. I mean, we don't have a bad news over there. Always positive, nice news. And one more thing. I mentioned the 5 names of those structures. You know, the sun, the moon, the earth, the dragon. And the 6th name was the love, the pyramid of love. You see, the words are very powerful. And when you assign the name, the pyramid of love, those structures, with that name, you color the whole valley in a unique and positive way. That's what from this project, you want positive news from Bosnia going to the world. We want universities from the U.S., from Canada, from Norway, from Swiss, from Egypt, from Saudi Arabia to come to Bosnia, professors, archaeologists, students, volunteers, researchers. We want hundreds and thousands of people there working on something real nice and positive. So this is the aim. And one more thing. You know, up until last year, when media were talking to the high schoolers what they want to study, where they want to go, which university.
Right.
Less than 1% of the young people would answer they'd like to study archaeology or history or anthropology. They even didn't know what the archaeology meant. And now, starting last year, more than 30% of young people want to study archaeology.
Wonderful.
I mean, it's such a revolutionary change in the consciousness of the young people. And you see, Bosnia is such a bad shape in an economical sense. Young people want to leave the country to go to Germany, Austria, France, Britain, Sweden. But now they want to study archaeology. They see the value in their own country, you know. So I think that's maybe one of the most positive things that we managed to do with our research. We gave them back a sense that there is something valuable in their own country. They have a reason to stay.
Well, I think it's wonderful, and I think that it's much deserved as well. That part of the world has seen a tremendous amount of difficulty and some really, really sad and terrible things happen there over the last few decades. And I'd love to see something beautiful come out of there like what you're talking about. Let's follow up on the conference real fast. The conference, which will be going, begins in August.
Yeah, it will be held in Sarajevo, the capital of Bosnia, from the August 25th till August 30th.
Okay.
It lasts for 1 week.
And it's right in the middle of open season, as it were.
Exactly right. Besides 50-60 scientists, the conference is open for observers. People can come. They pay a little fee, and then in fee we'll have 3 days, we're going to be touring different archaeological sites, and people will have a chance to mingle with the leading world scientists. And then 3 days of the conference, people can come and hear about the Bosnian pyramids, reports, not only about the Bosnian, but also about the Chinese and Mexican and Egyptian pyramids.
Oh, I'm sure it's just going to be just filled with information. Yeah.
And the last day, we're going to go and visit one of the sites of the Bosnian stone spheres. So, and one of the proceedings of the conference will be establishing the Global Center for the Pyramid Studies.
Mm-hmm.
What we want to do from Sarajevo, from Bosnia, to go and study pyramids, not only in Bosnia, but in Guatemala, in Peru, in China,
sure. And
the places.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, you are doing just an amazing piece of work, and I'm so thrilled that I was able to have you on the program. And I tell you what, there are listeners to this program who would probably do whatever they could do to get there and be a part of that in August, and I wouldn't be surprised if some of them actually make it. I would be there myself if I had the means and the time and all that stuff. But regardless, it's an amazing and remarkable project that you're in the middle of, and I can't wait to hear more about it. We'll have to plan another program sometime later in the summer, toward the end of summer, and we'll get an update on everything that happened in August, okay?
Okay, we will.
Samir, thanks again. It's been a thrill, and once again, just remarkable work that you're doing.
Well, thank you for having me.
You take care of yourself, all right? I'll talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Everybody, Samir Osmanagic, amazing. What a remarkable show. I'm very, very excited about the program tonight. I wasn't quite sure what to expect, but just remarkable and really, really sort of on a high right now. Okay, great stuff. We got about 4 minutes. I'll play a piece of music here to head on out and tell you all thanks, as I always do, for listening to the program and for supporting Radio Orbit and for supporting KOPN. I appreciate all of you. It's a great thrill to be able to do this and to be able to share it with y'all, okay? All right, so D Numbers, wonderful music, and we'll hear one more from them. This one's called Atalaya. And I'll see y'all in a week, or I'll talk to y'all in a week, and we will have Dr. John Sheliak, nuclear physicist extraordinaire and a close friend of mine. He'll be here in the studio and hanging out in Columbia/Rocheport, Missouri for a week or so, and we'll have a fun and interesting conversation with John next week, okay? All right, once again, D Numbers, Atalaya, it's Mike. You've been listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. And I think that's it for this evening because Ruthie did not come in tonight for her shift, so I'll play a little bit of music and then I'm going to shut this radio station down, all right? Take care of yourselves all, and we'll talk to you next week. KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM.